I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
At 38, Seth Small can deliver the game winner. The kick is up, and the Fighting Texas Aggies, a top five win. They take down the fourth-ranked Florida Gators. Let the celebration begin here at Kyle Field.
Crowd was certainly a factor in the game, I will certainly say that. Hopefully the university administration decides to let us pack the swamp for LSU next week.
You want to see 90,000?
I absolutely want to see 90,000 in the swamp, because that crowd was a major factor in the game. Our governor has passed a rule that we're allowed to pack the swamp. We have 90,000 in the swamp to give us that home field advantage that Texas A&M had today.
Oh boy, famous last words. Hello everybody, I'm Wendy Nix with Todd McShay and David Pollack and Dan Mullins. Gators once again leading the news cycle this afternoon, and here is why. Breaking news out of the SEC, and unfortunately Saturday's game between LSU and Florida at the Swamp has now been postponed after the Gators have seen a surge in positive COVID-19 tests this week. Florida with 18 scholarship players who have tested positive. The game tentatively rescheduled for December 12th.
Among our scholarship players, we have 18 current positives. We have another three walk-ons who are positive, so a total of 21 current team members. And when you add in those who are quarantined through contact tracing as a result of those positives, in addition to a handful of players who are on a non-COVID injury list, it gives the Gators less than 50 scholarship players available currently. We've reached a point where we don't think it's appropriate that we try to play the game this weekend.
I mean, I don't want to speculate on where we're at right now. I think we're taking like an abundance of caution. We're certainly hoping, and everybody that we've worked for, to get this morning's tests back before we conduct any team activity to make sure that we're keeping everyone safe as possible. I would still not be surprised if one to two of them were random, and the randoms can throw you off within the tracing and say, oh, well, this guy got it. It couldn't have been that. Or, you know, how did this person get in the group of getting it? You know, our medical staff has really spent time trying to trace the origins of where the clump of them would have come from.
This is the second SEC game we've seen postponed. We already saw Vanderbilt and Missouri fall victim to COVID-19. Senior writer Andrea Adelson joins us now. And let's go back to Florida, though. Andrea, what factored into the ultimate decision to postpone this game?
Florida simply didn't have enough scholarship players to be able to play. The SEC has a threshold of 53 scholarship players, and Florida clearly fell below that. And Athletic Director Scott Strickland said today that on Monday, he got a call early that morning that players started to report symptoms. They didn't have the results back from the Sunday testing, but once they started to get those tests back, they realized we've got a problem on their hands. They started daily testing, and now they're up to those 21 cases involving players, plus two coaches. Now, everybody is asymptomatic and or has mild symptoms, but at this point, Florida cannot practice, and they just don't have the personnel to be able to play.
And, of course, when you can't practice and you don't have the numbers, you certainly can't play. So the obvious question is, next weekend when they're set to host Missouri, what has to happen between now and then to make that game possible?
Well, Florida is going to continue to conduct daily testing until they're able to get the spread under control. They're hopeful there won't be more positives, but they simply don't know. So that's why they have to continue the daily testing. So the question then becomes, When can Florida resume practice? Will there be more tests? And then how many players can they get back next week who are currently in isolation and or quarantine because of positive tests and contact tracing? So Florida is going to need answers to those questions before they can figure out whether they can play a game next week.
Andrea, thank you. Keep in mind, Florida does have one open date, and that falls on Halloween weekend. So let's take a look at who's been affected. The Gators, certainly not the only team, as I mentioned before. Vanderbilt and Missouri already postponed. Vanderbilt would not have had met conference requirements either for scholarship players, and Baylor, too, has seen a spike in cases. As for Florida's opponent this past weekend, here's Texas A&M's Jimbo Fisher on ESPN Radio's KJC this morning.
Well, we had tests right after the game, and ours all come back negative. We immediately were tested right afterwards. We have a chip on our in our pads that says the amount of time we're around each individual on each every team. So you have status quo of, like, you know, the 50 guys. So we had nobody within the range of people that they had test positive that were around those guys. We've already been tested. We'll be tested again today. And we were tested Sunday. We were actually tested yesterday. Excuse me, we've already been tested twice. We have those results back. We had no negative. We had no positive test, and we'll be tested again on Thursday. So there's chips in there. There's places in there. The amount of time that you're associated with a guy, within contact with a guy, and then the testing and what you do. And then, you know, we're constantly educating our guys when they're away from here what to do and how to do it.
Well, we hope it goes without saying that the first priority should be the health of the entire staff, the players and coaches. But having said that, David, let me ask you this. We know the SEC clearly concentrated in the Southeast. And so with that in mind, what level of concern do you have at this point about the conference finishing the season?
First of all, just how crazy is it that we start college football live with Dan Mullen being a doctor and having to talk to doctors and just, I mean, it's just nuts the amount of learning like we've all had to do and the nuts the amount of craziness this season entails for everybody, including the players getting tested every week and the coaches and all, I mean, the staff, everything, just nuts. But I'm not concerned. I think that we knew this was going to happen. This is a part of it, Wendy. Like, this is one of the most contagious things we've ever seen. So we knew that when somebody gets it passes fast, it travels fast, and we knew that it was going to affect teams and weeks, and we've already seen it. Go talk to Houston. Go talk to Baylor. You know, a lot of these teams have postponed their season, and that's why the Big Ten seems like such a long shot in the Pac-12 when you're playing consecutive weeks back to back to back to back to back, and there is no time, built-in time for a positive postponement, you know, and something like that. So I think it was to be expected. Now it's just a matter of how do you slow it down? How do you make sure everybody's doing the right thing and everybody returns safely?
Yeah, and everyone in the country kind of has had to deal with all of this and adjust, and I think college football is no different. I mean, we're going to see throughout the rest of the season that this is not going to be, you know, isolated in the next week or 2 weeks. It's going to pop up in other places, other parts of the country. The SEC is fortunate that they have that open date on December 12th, so they can maybe be able to make up some of these games that are being missed. But ultimately, we're going to have to evaluate what we saw on the field, whether it's 6 games, 8 games, 10, 12, whatever the number of games is. And the college football playoff is going to, you know, committee is going to have a difficult job at the end of the year trying to compare apples to oranges to pears and to grapes. But at the end of the day, you've got to figure out who the best 4 teams are in the country. And I'm confident that they'll be able to do that as long as teams are able to play at least 6 games, I think.
Listen, we thought there was controversy before, but you make a solid point, Todd. The SEC really lucky in this regard. They have 2 open dates. Built in. If you remember, the Big Ten has zero, none, and they will start the season right. October 24th. Let's talk about these defenses in the SEC. Whoa, they've had trouble. Allowing just under 30 points per game, the most of any conference this season. 20 FBS teams are allowing over 450 yards per game. 5 belong to the SEC. Arkansas last year, the only SEC team to do that. And for Alabama Ole Miss, that's this week, or last week, I should say, the 111 combined points, the most in a regulation game in SEC history. It was almost as if defense was optional. Both teams clearly putting points on the board, but stopping and tackling, well, that was a different ball game altogether. And yes, Alabama is 3-0, but its defense is in a place it has not been since Saban took over in 2007. The Tide on pace to set their worst single season marks in a number of stats, including allowing 8 more points per game than any other season under Nick Saban. He was asked, by the way, if the lack of defense in the SEC was a result of the lack of spring football.
I think for a long time when we were able to not practice against each other, even in the summertime, we couldn't have 7-on-7, and we couldn't do any drills against each other. You know, it's much easier to practice offense on air than it is to practice defense on air because you're reacting to something all the time. Maybe that contributes to it. I really don't know. You know, we didn't tackle very well in the last game. We had missed assignments in tackling, probably the two things that were the biggest detriment for us, you know, in the last game in terms of the way we played defense. And I think those are fundamental things that you have to fix. I think when players press, they actually can get worse at those things. You know, you got to play relaxed and confident, and that comes from very good preparation, and that's what we need to do a better job of.
Todd, I think we all expected offenses to be ahead of defenses at this point, given the way things shaped up in the spring, but Alabama in particular is having all kinds of trouble, and I know you were at that Ole Miss game. What'd you see?
Well, it was, first of all, it was a lot of fun to watch, but it was also difficult to watch a Nick Saban defense play the way they did. And by that, I mean the two things he mentioned, actually, miscommunication and also poor tackling. And give Lane Kiffin a lot of credit, all the pre-snap motions, the different formations, all the things that he did in utilizing a mobile quarterback. But ultimately, Alabama plays better defense in this. They have to be more disciplined. And they couldn't even stop a tight end. And the miscommunication showed up over and over again with Kenny Yeboah, number 84 in this game. You just watch. This is one example of many where they just didn't communicate well. You've got Chris Allen, number 4, the linebacker. He's got initial coverage, and then he sees the running back. He's got to get into the flat. He passes him off to number 3, right? And it's just too late at that point. So it's miscommunication being a step slow and really a bunch of young players in some areas who are very talented, but they're just not playing to the level and with the crispness, David, that we're used to seeing from a Saban defense.
No, and it's going to be interesting. He's evolved so much offensively throughout the years, and you've seen that, you know, year after year, and they know they had to score points. Defensively, Todd, I don't know if you get the same feeling too, but I don't understand why when one person moves, 3 or 4 people have to move for Bama, and it happens consistently. I don't think you have to play defense like that. You can work around that, but missed tackles, you know, an effort, that's something that I think he'll stress all week long. And let's be honest, guys, y'all got to realize, just because this happened with Ole Miss doesn't mean it will happen all year long. You think Georgia's going to run in there and do what Ole Miss did? You're wrong. Georgia doesn't have the personnel to do that. Georgia doesn't live in the tempo world. They don't have a tailback that plays quarterback like Corral. By the way, if I was preparing for one quarter, if I didn't want to prepare for one quarterback in the SEC, it would be him. Literally, that would be a nightmare.
He was awesome,
because
man,
he's so quick. Oh, dude, he can break tackles. He can run away with you from speed. He can play under duress. Like, he had a great game, and he's going to score points. And then Lane Kiffin, the ultimate pain in the butt, with shifts and motions and formations. And then tempo so fast, you can't even line up. So I think it was all things coming together. Don't expect to see that this weekend at Alabama's defense versus Georgia.
No, and to your point, you got to give Ole Miss some credit in this regard and what Lane Kiffin was able to do. Again, strength on strength this weekend, though, when we see Alabama facing that solid Georgia defense. Luckily for the Tide, their offense seems to be clicking. Still to come, Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney, no stranger to developing NFL quarterbacks, see Deshaun Watson. Hear what Dabo loves about Trevor Lawrence's future as a pro.
Give you every ounce of what he's got, you got it. So I don't know what you could want in a quarterback that he doesn't possess.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
If Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence does win the Heisman Trophy, you might point to Saturday's showdown with Derek King's Miami Hurricanes. He outplayed his fellow Heisman contender to the tune of nearly 300 yards passing and three scores. Here's his head coach, Dabo Swinney, on his future in the NFL.
As far as, Trevor as a quarterback prospect, I mean, I don't know what you would want in a quarterback that he doesn't possess, so. Best way I can answer that. I mean, there's nothing that you could desire to have a quarterback that's not there. You want size, you got it. You want a guy that can run, you got it. You want a guy that has great football IQ, you got it. You want a guy that's a great leader, you got it. You want a guy that loves to work, loves to prepare, same guy every day, you got it. You got to want a guy that's humble, you got it. You want a guy that makes everybody else better, doesn't ask anything more from anybody than he's willing to give, you got it. You want a guy that's accurate, you got it. You want a guy that's got great pocket presence, you got it. You want a guy that's got toughness and ain't afraid to go get a first down, you got it. You want a guy that's going to give you every ounce of what he's got, you got it. So I don't know what you could want in a quarterback that he doesn't possess. That's the best way I can answer.
All right.
Wendy,
and
we got it.
You want a guy
we got it.
We got it.
We got it.
We got it. We got it. All right, listen. He hasn't thrown a pick in a year. 355 passes since his last interception. The second longest streak in ACC history. He needs just 25 more passes without a pick to break Russell Wilson's conference record. We got it. You know who's got it? David Pollack. It's Todd McShay, because he spends a lot of time, of course, evaluating these quarterbacks. And I know you're already doing that. What are you seeing, Todd? It's Trevor Lawrence's third year with the Tigers. What's the development been like?
Well, he has every single, physical and mental attribute that you look for. But I do think he's taken his game to another level this year. I mean, I had the Wake Forest game, the first game of the season, and you could tell within the first 10, 15 plays, this guy's just seeing it faster. He's processing. He understands the game, and it's really slow and easy to him. At least that's how it looks when you're evaluating him as a player. I have the highest grade I've given to a quarterback on Trevor Lawrence since go back to Andrew Luck in 2012. So you're talking a long time. And even the last few years, thinking about all the great quarterbacks we've had, Sam Darnold, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Kyler Murray, I still have a higher grade on him because I think his potential is enormously high, and I also think he's starting to ascend, which is what you want to see in a final year of a quarterback's career as he leaves college going to the NFL.
There's nothing he can't do. I understand that. Todd, I'll ask you this. Do you have enough tape on him? He doesn't throw over the middle of the field.
I knew you were
going
to go.
It just doesn't happen very often.
I know.
Well, I'm just saying, bro. I'm watching it, too.
And no, you're right. You're right.
He's elite attacking the edges. Clemson's offense is good at it. I don't see it. So how do you know if he can really layer the football over linebackers, between safeties? How do you evaluate that?
You do see it on the outside with the touch and layering the ball, but I completely agree. You watch even the Miami tape. I just got done watching it a couple hours ago, and it's – Screen, RPO, screen to the backside, out throwing the perimeter. It's all the same stuff that they usually do. But there are enough throws where you can see him anticipating and having that timing. But listen, that's the only difficult part of this evaluation. But I don't think it takes a super scout to figure out that this guy can adjust to that in a different scheme in the NFL.
That boy good.
Well, one touch. Yeah, he's definitely. Check. I tell you what, when you start talking about the highest grade since Andrew Luck, though, that turned some heads. It turned my head this morning, Todd. I told you that. And by the way, you are a super scout, so we got that, too. Still to come, yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about Mike Leach's air raid offense. Is it leaking at Mississippi State? David reveals what's wrong, and you can hear how Coach Leach has put some of his players on notice.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
College Football Live. Mac Brown joins us. His fifth-ranked Tar Heels getting set for Florida State this weekend. And plus, we'll introduce you to another Manning quarterback. Here he comes, the ESPN2 set to broadcast the high school game of Peyton and Eli's nephew, Archie Manning, Arch Manning, Thursday at 9 Eastern. He's projected to be the number one quarterback in the recruiting class of 2023. Right now, though, let's take a look at What's Your Beef, brought to you by Old Trapper. After a 44-34 season-opening win over the defending champion LSU Tigers, Mississippi State's air raid offense, well, they put together just 16 points in back-to-back losses.
Do you want me to give it to
Mike Leach addressed whether some of his players were all in or not.
I think, and this happens every time you take over a new program, I think we do have a few fence riders, that are trying to decide whether they're going to commit or they're not going to commit to what everybody's doing here, and anytime there's a transition, there's a certain number of guys, and I've been through a number of these transitions, who are going to do the wait and see thing. Well, I'll see if I like what I see. Well, yeah, it's too bad. I mean, the train rolls on, and so they need to jump on board pretty quick, or the train's going to roll on without them.
Oh, boy, David, what's your beef with that air raid offense at Mississippi State?
Well, this isn't abnormal. Every situation you come into, coaches have got to get buy-in. They got to have that moment to believe, and they thought it was LSU. Yes, we are so good.
No.
It must be the Tigers.
Not so fast.
The Tigers stink. They're not very good. So I think it's going to take some time. But listen, Mike Leach is a different bird, okay? He is... He's a little bit different. You're going to have to learn that. They're going to have to figure that out. But I think offensive standpoint, it was easy against LSU. It was man coverage on the outside. You got easy throws. You go the next game, obviously, Arkansas. They start dropping more guys, right? 8 guys dropping into coverage. You ain't going to run the football. You better fit in the tight window. Mistakes. Then you go, obviously, the next LSU clip again. You see more good stuff. Then you go back to Kentucky. I mean, it's just... They're making them earn it. It's going to take time. Mike Leach is going to take time to develop his system. His receivers, you can tell, are still learning because in an air raid system, you don't run a route. Like, you don't run an out route. You literally are going to adjust to whatever defensive coverage you see, and you and the quarterback have to be on the same page. So, Todd, Mike Leach isn't the most easy person to deal with anyways. And when you make these kind of comments publicly, I don't think it helps either.
Thanks, Pollock, for leaving me about 10 seconds to transition to North Carolina. Number 5 team in the country. They're number 5 team in the country. UNC, watch Michael Carter, 7:30 Eastern time on ABC. The running back is averaging 10 yards per pop. Hand this guy the ball. You see the juice, the explosiveness. He's
10?
A first
down
waiting to happen.
See you tomorrow, everybody. Mac Brown joins us.